The thought this morning of our lesson is, why do people still suffer? One day there was a tough old farmer who was out walking. He was on a narrow path when he met a man who didn't necessarily care for him. One of these men would have to step aside to allow the other to pass. The man came charging ahead at the old farmer, saying that I never make any way for fools. To which the farmer quickly stepped aside, saying, I always do. One of the most common questions I hear asked on the internet, or maybe we are asked in person, is, if God is real, why do people still suffer? While the world takes pity on itself and acts like the victim, the Bible shows us how Christians can turn a person from being a victim into someone who is a victor. And that's what James is going to share with us this morning. No matter what we're dealing with, whether it's trials on the outside or temptations that are happening on the inside, James is going to tell us that through faith in God and Jesus, his son, we can experience victory. But for Christians to turn tears of despair into tears of joy, there are three things that we'd like to look at this morning. The first one is found in James chapter 1 and verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. And you can see I'm paraphrasing, because I also know that people read from different versions, whether it be from the King James, the NIV, American Standard. I know that there's a variety of versions. I am paraphrasing what you're reading there. Now, notice that James doesn't say if, but it says when this takes place. In other words, you can count on it. Being a Christian, that's part of the Christian life. You can expect it. Jesus himself said in John 16 and verse 33, I have told you this so that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have trouble, but be courageous. I have overcome the world, he says. You see, loved ones, sometimes trials come simply to us because we are human. And this would be things like sickness. We experience accidents. We experience disappointments. And sadly, we experience death. But other trials come because we are Christians. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 4 and 12, dear friends, do not be surprised by the fiery ordeal that is taking place among you to test you, as though something is strange when it's happening to you. Do not be surprised. As Christians, we should be able to expect those trials. Paul also tells us in 2 Timothy 3 and 12, indeed, all who want to live a godly life in union with Christ will be persecuted. How did Jesus start the Sermon on the Mount? Blessed are those who suffer, basically. He's talking about who hunger and thirst, who are persecuted for my name's sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In those first opening statements that he said in Matthew chapter 5, starting the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are those. And each one of them was some type of persecution or suffering. And so because Satan fights us, and because the world opposes us, we can definitely expect trials. But how are we going to respond to these trials? That is the question this morning. James, look what it said again in verse 2. Count it all joy. That conflicts with what human thinking is, isn't it? We talked a little bit in our Bible study a couple weeks ago about peculiar. And the word peculiar, and it talks about Christians being a peculiar or different, not following the norm. I loved it as a teacher. How many times do somebody get caught doing something. You ask them and you confront them as a teacher, and what's the first response that student will say? Well, everyone else is doing it. I always loved that. Don't think that I didn't use it as a teenager growing up. I was like, oh, Mom, everybody else is doing it. And I remember the phrase, well, if everybody jumped off the bridge, would you jump also? Well, it depends on how high the bridge is. Maybe I would. I don't know. You know, you think about peer pressure. And they talk about peer pressure. But James says, we're going against that. When the world feels persecuted, you count it joy. Remember in Acts 5, when the apostles were pulled in to stand before the council? After being flogged and beaten, the Bible says in Acts 5 and 41, they left the council rejoicing to have been considered worthy to suffer dishonor for the sake of the name. We see over and over again in the book of Acts, Brother Tom, when he does the sermons, for those that aren't familiar, Brother Tom and I alternate back and forth. We do a couple of months, probably about 3 months each. He's been studying in the book of Acts, and he's been talking about this and the things that they go through and how they've considered worthy. And many of us would, I know when I read that, I think, wait a minute, if I was just beaten almost to death, or I was put in prison and stuck in solitude and chained, and then I'm released, the first thing they did is went back and started doing the same thing again. You would think the first thing you would do is maybe reconsider what your plan is and maybe leave that town. But many of them went back. Why? For the joy of sharing Christ. I'd like to share a poem with you, which I think will help us get the point. Count your blessings instead of your crosses. Count your gains instead of your losses. Count your joys instead of your woes. Count your friends instead of your foes. Count your smiles instead of your tears, and count your courage instead of your fears. Count your full years instead of your lean, and count your kind deeds instead of your mean. Count your health instead of your wealth, and count on God instead of yourself. I'd like to look at James says next in James 1 verse 3. For you know that when your faith succeeds in facing such trials, the result is ability to endure. James says if Christians have the right knowledge, if we have the faith concerning the value of trials, it makes it possible to have a joyful attitude. In other words, when we finally understand that trials are there to test our faith, that we can know that the testing of our faith actually brings the best out in us. A severe rash prompted a man from a rural area to come to town to be examined by a doctor. After the usual history taking followed by a series of tests, the physician advised the patient that he would have to get rid of the dog that was obviously causing the allergic reaction. As the man was preparing to leave the office, the doctor asked him, out of curiosity, if he planned to sell the animal or just give it away. Neither one, the patient replied. I'm going to get me one of them second opinions I've been reading about, because it's a lot easier to find a doctor than it is a good bird dog. We know that doctors can give prescriptions and treatment plans, but it is up to the patient to take the prescription and carry out the treatment for that plan. We know that James, well, actually all of God's word, is our treatment plan as Christians. And unless we follow it, we may not seek the cure. In 1 Peter 1 and 7, we can read the following thought. So that the genuineness of your faith, which is more valuable than gold that perishes when it is tested by fire, may result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus is finally revealed. We know that any athlete will tell you that they cannot expect to win if they don't train. But the more they train, the stronger they get, the more comfortable and confident they become. The second point I'd like to make from the book of James, is telling us today that we can have joy in our trials because we know that the testing works for us, not against us. When our faith is tested, it produces patience. Romans 5, verses 3 and 4 tell us, not only that, but we also boast in our sufferings, knowing that the suffering produces endurance, that endurance produces character, and that character produces hope. In the Bible, patience is not a passive acceptance of circumstances. The Greek word for patience means the ability to exhibit steadfastness and consistency in the face of the most daunting difficulty. In other words, Christians need courage and they need perseverance in the face of suffering. We know that Christians need to keep on keeping on, even when life is getting rough, even when our circumstances are really difficult. And make no mistake about the Christian, that kind of perseverance can come only through experiencing trials. And when Christians finally accept and understand that when trials can accomplish in our lives, when we can accomplish those difficulties in our lives, it's then we have a joyful attitude toward our trials. And please don't think, well, that's easy for James to say. Many people would have that attitude. Well, that's easy for you to say. We need to remember what James himself went through. They say, don't judge a man until you've walked a mile in his shoes. Well, let's look at James for just a full moment. Before James was killed, before being a Christian, he experienced sorrow. If you would study the life of James, you find out that he did not have it very rosy either. Remember that James was one of the main leaders of the Christians in Jerusalem who continually faced persecution from those outside the church. James also learned that difficulties can produce patience. He never tells us to pretend that a trial is non-existent. Instead, he wants us to recognize and to rejoice that any problem can be an occasion for God, and that through us, there is a way that otherwise wouldn't be. We know that Jesus found a way, a different way of living, to be drawn back to God. That while we were yet sinners, Jesus gave up himself that we would have that promise of eternal life. We as Christians are Christ-like. Christians, of course, you know that Christ, without Christ, I am nothing. And we know the word Christian. We are followers, we are carrying out God's will. So that is why Jesus often told, go out, therefore, teaching all these nations the things that you have been taught. Have them observe, and he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and he believeth not shall be condemned. And this is what the Bible calls a testing of our faith. It calls us to believe in the goodness of God and to trust that he is not only willing to be able to accomplish his purposes, no matter what befalls us, we know that any difficulty, whether great or whether small, is an occasion for joy. But only when we remind ourselves of the nature of the God who loves us. But for us to really benefit from our trials, we need to understand James' next point, which is verse 4. James verse 4 says, and let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, lacking in nothing. To truly turn our tears of despair into tears of joy, we need to let patience do its work. We often want to get our trials or difficulties over with quickly, don't we? I know I would. But there are times when the best thing for us to do is to bear up, as they say, under the trial that we are facing. And so instead of grumbling and complaining, we should patiently endure the trial. We are doing good, go around doing good in spite of the trial that's faced of us. Now remember that James is writing to a bunch of Christians who really knew how to grow up spiritually. And what he was saying here is, that when patience has its opportunity to work, it produces maturity. Remember, all through the book of James, he's going to be talking about patience and maturity. When James uses this word, perfect, the word perfect doesn't mean sinlessness, but it means completeness. It means wholeness. It means maturity. It means commitment. Now, I know that on our Bible study on Sunday evenings, Brother Tom does a great job of looking up words, the meaning of words for Brother Dale. I looked up Webster's Dictionary, the word commitment. And it tells me that commit means to entrust. It means to give charge to perform, and to pledge. I also found it interesting in my search for the definition of commit. I actually found a dictionary which did not have the word commit in it, which brought me to the conclusion, I guess, that they have not been committed to commitment. And if we as Christians want to run the race well, spiritually speaking, we need to develop patience and commitment. And that is only going to happen when we train spiritually. In other words, we can only grow through spiritual maturity. If we allow ourselves to face trials which test our faith, and everyone here knows that letting patience have its perfect work is not easy. If anything, it requires wisdom, which enables us to see the values of our trials. And our third and final point this morning is found in James verses 5 through 8. If anyone of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like the wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is double-minded. He is a double-minded man. He is unstable in all his ways. What does James say? If we lack wisdom, ask it from God. Because God has promised to give it generously. And please don't think that God is going to rebuke us for making such a request. Think about Solomon. Solomon, in all his wisdom, even Solomon's request for wisdom was well-pleasing to God. You could read in 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 7 through 12. But what exactly is this wisdom that he prayed for? Because we need to be careful to distinguish wisdom from knowledge. Knowledge involves information. It involves facts, etc. Whereas wisdom is the ability or insight to properly use those facts quickly and in the correct way. Knowledge comes only through his word, and we need to carefully study it if we want to know what the will of God is. However, the wisdom to properly use his word can be received through prayer. A proper prayer is a prayer asked in faith and with no doubt. Otherwise, the prayer will probably not be answered by God. And this, according to James, is the way that we can turn our tears of despair into tears of joy. It's having the knowledge and viewpoint that difficulties can accomplish a lot of good for a Christian. It's being patient whilst enduring those difficulties to accomplish its work. When we are going through difficult times, we need to make sure that we are using the wisdom of God, which gives in answer the prayer to help us put it all together. And when we finally understand these things, it's then that even trials can seem as a source of joy for the Christian. What does Solomon write? Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7, 8, and 9. I ask you, God, to let me have two things before I die. I'd be interested to know that. Solomon, in all his wisdom, asked for two things before I die. Keep me from lying. And let me be neither rich nor poor. I'm pausing there for a moment. I think that's very interesting. May I not lie in anything I do? May I always be known for telling the truth? And make me neither rich nor poor. If I stop right there, I think I'm that kind of a person. You'd look at me and definitely know that I'm not rich. But as I compare to other people in the world, that I'm not poor. What does he mean by that? So give me only, and he continues, by the way, Solomon continues. So give me only as much food as I need. If I have more, I might say that I do not need you. Interesting. Every once in a while in those jackpots, Super Lotto and stuff reach like, you know, $200 million and whatever. Yeah, I have that temptation. Wow, what would it be like to have that, to win those that money? But here's Solomon saying, if I have that, I might say that I do not need you. But if I am poor, that might cause me to steal and bring disgrace upon you, my God. So Solomon tells us that when we are poor, we may be tempted to curse God, which is exactly what Job's wife asked her husband to do, isn't it? We know that in the book of Job, in Job 2 and 9, what does his wife say? His wife says to him, you are still as faithful as ever, aren't you? Look at what everything that's happened. Why are you so faithful to God? Why don't you just curse God and die? And the problem with being wealthy is that we may be tempted to forget God. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10 through 14, that before God gave the Israelites the promised land, he warned Israel that they might forget God because of their wealth. And if you know the story or you read on, you know what happened. Hosea 13, verses 5 and 6. I took care of you in a dry desert land, but when you entered the good land, you became full and you became satisfied. And then you grew proud and you forgot me. Exactly what God told them would happen. So here in James, he's going to share with us some reasons to be joyous, whether we're rich or whether we're poor. I'd like to now go to James chapter 1, verse 9 now. Dropping down to verse 9, it says, those Christians who are poor must be glad when God lifts them up. James says, if we are poor, then we can rejoice that we have been lifted up by God. Then in James 2, 5, we go to the second chapter in verse 5, it says, listen, my dear friends, God chose the poor people of this world to be rich in faith and to possess the kingdom which he promised to those who love him. And so what James is telling us here is that even if you are poor, you can still be spiritually rich and on the equal par with other Christians. We have the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. Which one would you rather be? The rich man looked like he had it all throughout his days. Lazarus, being a poor man, begged at the table, you know, underneath the table, almost like the dogs. The dogs would lick his sores. Here is a man very poor. But yet when it came to judgment, which one was comforted? Revelation 2, verses 8 and 9 tell us, to the angel of the church in Smyrna, write that this is the message from the one who is the first and the last, who died and lived again. I know your troubles. I know that you are poor, but really you are rich. I know the evil things said against you by those who claim to be Jews, but are not. They are a group that belongs to Satan. Now, not only can the poor rejoice because God has lifted them up, but if you are rich, then you too can rejoice because you have been given, because you have been humbled. Now, how does God humble the rich, I would ask. Let's look at James, going back to James 1. Now let's look at verses 10 and 11. And the rich Christians must be glad when God brings them down. For the rich will pass away like the flower of a wild plant. The sun rises when it's blazing heat and burns the plant. Its flowers fall off and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will be destroyed while they go about their business. In other words, he's saying that the riches with the wealthy are only temporary. in 1 Timothy 6 and 17. It tells those who are rich in the present world not to be arrogant and not to place their confidence in anything as uncertain as riches. Indeed, let them place their confidence in God, who lavishly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So as I bring this to a close, I'd like to summarize that not only are our riches temporary, but they're also unable to redeem our souls. The psalmist in Psalm 49, verses 6 through 9 tells us, by evil people who trust in their riches and boast of their great wealth, we can never redeem ourselves. We cannot pay God the price for our lives, because the payment for a human life is too great. What we could pay would never be enough to keep us from the grave. We can never pay to let us live forever. Think about what price you give. Jesus, what were the words that Jesus gave? What shall a man profit if he ever could try to even gain the whole world, but lose his very own soul? What do we give in exchange for ourselves, for our soul? There is nothing that we can give, but yet there is the world that we can gain by obedience to his care. I don't care how rich you are, you cannot buy your way into heaven. May our God bless us all as we allow him to turn our tears of despair into tears of joy. I'd like to leave you with the inspired words of a man who knew exactly what we're talking about today. Paul wrote this in Philippians. I'd like to close with Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13. I'm not saying this because I am in any need, for I have learned to be content in whatever situation I am in. I know how to be humble, and I know how to prosper. In each and every situation, I have learned the secret of being full and of going hungry, of having too much and of having too little. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Nevertheless, it was kind of you to share my troubles. This morning, we need to have that strength. We need to be able to look at our lives, and we need to be able to say that I have the strength to do that. I have what God wants me to be. We know that the only way that our tears of sorrow can be turned into tears of joy is by being obedient to God's will. We know that we need to not partake in this world and think of ourselves. We need to think, like Lazarus, of that world to come. Jesus has promised us, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, all you that suffer, all you that have trials and tribulations, come unto me and I will give you rest. Revelation 2:10, be thou found faithful unto death that you might have that crown of righteousness set up for you. Today, the lesson is yours. You have that opportunity, whatever your situation is, whether to be buried with him in baptism or to ask for the prayers of the congregation, whatever your need is, will you come forward and make your life right as together we stand and sing our song of invitation?